Today we have Crossing the Jordan, Joshua 3 through 5, 12. And last week in our introduction to the book of Joshua, we learned that it was a continuation of the book of Deuteronomy. And it was Moses that brought the nation out of Egypt, gave them God's laws, taught them how to live in right relationship with God and then with one another. So the story of Joshua picks up God's story with Moses' death. So we're somewhere around 1445 BC at this point. God is now preparing his nation to take possession of Canaan, the land of promise, and Joshua then now is his chosen leader. The author is unknown, but from internal evidence, Deuteronomy and Joshua are edited compilation of firsthand reports, and the date when it was written had to be in sometime before the monarchy in 1050 BC. The purpose of Joshua now is twofold: God's fulfillment of his promise to Abraham in bringing him into the land of promise, but also his judgment on the Canaanites. Do you remember who they're descended from? Noah. It's Noah's grandson, and rather than turning to the Lord, they turn to idolatry, and they become the poster child, if you will, for the worst of the worst, and we saw that in Leviticus 18. So chapter 1 then sets the stage as leadership is transferred from Moses to Joshua. Joshua served alongside Moses for 40 years, and he was commissioned by Moses as his successor. Then after his death, Yahweh confirms that he is his servant, and then lastly we saw the people accepting him. During the commissioning, Joshua was charged how many times not to fear and be strong? 3 times, and again emphasizing the importance. And he was also told how to be successful, and that is to know God's word and obey it, especially in times of fear, because he's to remember God is always with him. Chapter 2 then was the story of the Gentile woman, and Rahab. What was her occupation? She was a prostitute, but she recognized that Yahweh was the God over the Canaanites. And so when the spies came, she hid them from the local authorities and told them that all the Canaanites were melting in fear over the God of Israel and the Israelites. She asked for her life and that of her family be spared when the Israelites conquered Jericho, and the spies agreed to it on conditions. What was the condition? Don't betray us. And so we ended last week with the spies had returned to Joshua, and they said, "The Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us." So today we pick up with chapter 3, and now we're going to cross over the Jordan. Joshua 3:1. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the Levitical priests carrying it, you are to move out from your position and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have not been this way before. But keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits or half a mile between you and the Ark. Do not go near it. So early in the morning, they get up from their camp at Shittim and leave. And I did look that up. It's acacia tree is what that word means. They move to the bank of the Jordan River. They're right across from Jericho. And then they have to wait another 3 days. And finally the officers say, okay, get ready to move. As soon as the Ark of the Covenant moves out, you follow it. Do you remember back to Moses' day? What was the presence of God that they could see? The pillar of cloud and fire. And whenever that moved, they knew they needed to pack up and move. This time, it's the Ark, which is God's royal throne. It represents his invisible presence with them. And I like it because they're going to lead them. And because God is taking the lead, the priests, not the Levites, carry the Ark. That intrigued me because normally it's the Kohathites. When we went back and looked in the lesson, they are the ones that cover up and everything like that. But now we have the Levites actually carrying it. Since God is leading the procession, the Levites are the ones that will be carrying his throne. And this is very unusual and the only time you're going to see it. He's a holy God, therefore the people have to stay a distance from him. And it's about a half a mile. Joshua then gave instructions to each of the groups. He starts with the people. He says, consecrate yourself for tomorrow. The Lord will do amazing things among you. Consecrate is to set yourself apart as holy. And there were the rituals that we covered with the bathing and the restraining from sex. And the whole thing is so that they are purified when they come in the presence of the Lord. Then to the priests, he said, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up and went ahead of them. I tried to imagine this amazing procession with God leading them. And I like that he tells Joshua why he's doing it and what he's doing. Verse 7. Today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so they may know that I am with you just as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan River, go and stand in the river. So the Lord's going to do these amazing things just as he had done when they left Egypt in order to elevate Joshua's statues just like he did that of Moses. I can't imagine trying to file Moses as a leader. I think that would be a very hard thing to do. But the amazing thing would begin when the priests stand in the river. Okay, the Jordan River is fairly small. It's between 3 feet at the narrow to 10 at the widest. For us, we'd look at a little creek. We wouldn't think of it much as a barrier to anything. But the Jordan is very steep on both sides down in it. It's fairly deep. At this time, Jeremiah's writings tell us it's filled with bushes all around, and there's lions in those bushes. But there's one little fact here that he adds, and that it's flood stage. We all seen the TV. We know what happens when rivers flood. I mean, whole cities go underwater. And this could be as wide as 100 feet. But what happens with floods? It's raging water. And you step in and you're just swept away. So what is he doing? He says, I want you to carry me, carry this ark, and I want you to go stand in this at flood. Then Joshua spoke as the Lord's servant in verse 9. It's the old King James Version and the prophets. It would be, thus saith the Lord. But in this case, he says, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you. And he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. 7 of them. See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one for each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. So God's going to go ahead. He's going to dry up the river and drive out 7 nations. I think we've kind of figured out by now that 7's a significant number. In 6 days, he created the earth, and on the 7th day, he rested. So 7 represents completion. You're going to find these 7 listed 23 times in Joshua. They're going to be in different orders. But how do we know the God of Israel has authority to do this? Because he's the Lord of all the earth. And he says it twice. Therefore, he's the Lord of the Jordan. He's the Lord of the Canaan. And when the priests obey, they set the foot in the Jordan, the waters stop, stand up in a heap. I kind of got intrigued by this, because remember last week, Joshua was told, wherever you set your foot, I will give you. And now we find the priests, when they set their foot in the water, it's going to stand up. He wants them to step out in faith. Then he's told to choose 12 men. He doesn't tell them what they're going to do. We'll get to that later. But verse 14. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carry the Ark reach the Jordan and their feet touch the water's edge, the water from the upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at the town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowed down to the Sea of Aruba, that is the Dead Sea, and was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground, while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing of the ground. This is one of the amazing things God did. When the priest stepped in the water, it immediately dried up, so they're standing on dry ground. It stopped up at Adam, which happened to be 18 miles north. And he had to know the timing, because in order for the water to stop, he had to stop it in time for them to stand in and have it on dry ground. I had to wonder where the water went, because we're at flood stage. You know, usually if you dam it, it's okay. It just kind of stays there. But if it's at flood stage, where's it go? I don't know. Then we get to chapter 4, and we have several commissions. 4:1. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests are standing, and carry them over with you, and put them down at the place where you will stay tonight." So at this point, everybody's crossed over. The priests are still in the river. They're holding the ark in the middle, and these 12 are sent back in. Verse 4. So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, "Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each one of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever." So the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. They took the 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan according to the number of tribes of the Israelites, as the Lord had told Joshua. And they carried them over with them to their camp, where they put them down. Joshua set up the 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant stood, and they are there today. The stones are to be a sign, which is a visual reminder for future generations. Do you remember the signs that we've had up to this point? What's the sign of the Noahic Covenant?
Rainbow.
The rainbow. God's never going to destroy the earth by flood. The second sign he gave was to Abraham with the Abrahamic covenant, that circumcision. He gave a sign to the Egyptians to show that he was the true God and not their God, which was the 10 plagues. And now we come to the Mosaic law, and the sign of the law is keeping the Sabbath. So each one of these signs are reminders of something. And so the story began now with an overview, and we're going to circle back and get the details. And he talks about the Transjordan tribes. Remember, they're the ones that had gotten their land. And last week, they said, "We'll go first." So now we're going to find out how that works. Chapter 4, verse 10. Now the priests who carried the ark remained standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything the Lord had commanded Joshua was done by the people, just as Moses had directed Joshua. The people hurried over, and as soon as all of them had crossed, the ark of the Lord and the priests came to the other side while the people watched. The men of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over, ready for battle, in front of the Israelites as Moses had directed them. About 40,000 armed for battle crossed over before the Lord to the plains of Jericho for war. So we kind of try to picture this event. So what do we have? We've got the ark. The priests are carrying it. They come to the Jordan. They step in. The water stops. They go out into the middle. All the people now are gathered on the banks. They're watching. The first ones to go over are the 40,000 Transjordan warriors in full armor. And they go in front of the ark, which is basically passing in review. They're going by God. So they're the first ones that go up into the promised land. They're probably there for protection in case anybody attacks them, but nobody does. And then following them would be the people. There's 2 million of them, and they all have to cross in one day. I thought about those priests standing there. I mean, the ark is heavy. I've got a picture of it there. I mean, it's a wooden box covered in gold, but all this heavy covering as well, and they're standing holding it all day while 2 million people hurry across. So they had to have a wide area. Everybody would be crossing at the same time. We have a bookshelf moment here, because there's 40,000 warriors, anytime you see a rounded number like that, it's not an exact number, but it represents something. 40 in the Old Testament generally represents like a generation. But in this case, 40,000 means a large number. There's actually more than 40,000 warriors in the Transjordan. But it basically is saying there's a very large army of men crossing and then followed by the 2 million plus people. It's an amazing sight. The waters dried up, and it's a repeat of the miracle of the Red Sea with Moses. God says he did this to exalt Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him all the days of his life, just as they stood in awe of Moses. So now at this point, Joshua is firmly established as the leader of Israel. The story continues in verse 16. The Lord told Joshua to command the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant law to come out of the Jordan. So Joshua commanded the priests, come up out of the Jordan. The priests came up out of the river carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. No sooner had they set their feet on dry ground than the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and ran at flood stage just as before. Think about that. When Moses had caused the water to go back, he had held his staff out, and then the water came back. With Joshua now, he gives the Lord's command, and the priests step out, and then the water comes back. God's timing becomes evident exactly when this took place. Verse 19, on the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. I love this. We just had Palm Sunday, which is the 10th day of the first month, and it's actually Lamb Selection Day. To celebrate Passover, you choose your lamb and then take it with you for 4 days. But they're crossing over on Lamb Selection Day, or we would, in New Testament, called it Palm Sunday. Verse 20. Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their parents, what do these stones mean? Tell them Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. Throughout the Old Testament, we're told about memorials and standing stones. When something really important happened, they would set up a pile of stones somewhere so that people would ask, why is this here? What did it do? And it gives them an opportunity to share what God had done. And I've thought about that often. You know, it's probably a good idea for us because God's done things in our own lives. And I've often thought I ought to have something in my home where somebody would walk in and say, what's that? You know, tell me about that. And it's an opening to tell what God's done for us. Israelite camps at Gilgal. That's a Canaanite site. It means circle. They're not sure if it was a place where they set up memorials or whether it was a burial site or what exactly it was. But Joshua now adds his memorial there to the one true God. Verse 24, he did this so that all the people of the earth would know that the hand of the Lord is powerful and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. That's the Old Testament theme, that the world may know that he's the one true God and a way of drawing them to him. He also did it so that they would fear him, and we've already talked about fear is not to be afraid, although the Canaanites are because they don't have a relationship, but it's to see his power and to be in reverence and awe of who our God really is. He is the Lord of the whole earth. The result of the miracle crossing is in verse 25. Now when all the Amorite kings west of the Jordan and all the Canaanite kings along the coast heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan before the Israelites until they had crossed over, their hearts melted in fear, and they no longer had the courage to face the Israelites. This is exactly what Rahab had told the spies, right? That their hearts were melting with fear. Well, we go on to the first 12 verses of chapter 5, because we have a couple things that God has to do before he can take them into the conquest. They are in the promised land, but they haven't taken possession. First, they have to be made right in right relationship. So they have to be prepared, and he does this through circumcision and Passover. So verse 2. At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, make flint knives and circumcise the Israelites again. So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the Israelites at Gibeth Haaraah. Now this is why he did so, because all those who came out of Egypt, all the men of military age, died in the wilderness on the way after leaving Egypt. All the people that came out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the wilderness during the journey from Egypt had not. The Israelites had moved about in the wilderness 40 years until all the men who were of military age when they left Egypt had died, since they had not obeyed the Lord. For the Lord had sworn to them that they would not see the land he had solemnly promised their ancestors, to give us a land flowing with milk and honey. So he raised up their sons in their place, and these were the ones Joshua circumcised. They were still uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. And after the whole nation had been circumcised, they remained where they were in camp until they all healed. So the first preparation to conquest the land is circumcision of all the males born in the wilderness. Circumcision was a visual reminder of the Abrahamic promise. Remember, he said, I'm going to bless you. You're going to be a nation. I'm going to give you this land. And it's through your seed that all of the world will be blessed. And so the sign is circumcision, reminding him that it's passed down from generation to generation. It took a lot of faith to do it in enemy territory. I thought, why didn't they do it on the other side of the river where there was nobody there? But in this case, it's a way of showing that God would protect him. Would they obey? Why hadn't they been circumcised in the wilderness? Because they were disobedient to the Lord. He didn't allow them to do it. Basically, all of them had to die, that whole generation. And the Lord said to Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you, so that the place has been called Gilgal to this day. The sins of the previous generation that are preventing them from entering into the land and resulted in this death has now been rolled away. The fun part is Gilgal in Hebrew actually means rolling away. So anyway, according to God's law, only those that were circumcised, those who obeyed the covenant, were identified as God's people, could now participate in Passover. So now the entire generation is completely identified with God. Now all of them have been circumcised. Basically, they've made a recommitment. They've obeyed the Lord. They're identified as his people now. So now they can celebrate Passover. So on the evening of the 14th day of the month, while camped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrate Passover. This is so cool because it's the third Passover. The first one was the Passover. Remember, they had to put the blood of the lamb on the door, and the death angel passed over. And that, of course, resulted in their being able to leave. Before they left in Exodus 13:5, the Lord had said, when I bring you into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Hivites, and Jebusites, the land he swore to your forefathers, a land flowing with milk and honey, you are to observe this ceremony in this month. So even before they left, he says, when you're in the promised land, you need to observe the celebration. The second Passover was the first anniversary. That was on Mount Sinai in Numbers 9. So this is the third one. And they're fulfilling the command. He said, before they even left, I want you to celebrate this when you come into the land. How interesting is it? They go into the land on the 10th day, and on the 14th day, they celebrate Passover. Verse 11, the day after the Passover, that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and roasted grain. The manna stopped the day after they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites, but that year they ate the produce of Canaan. For 40 years, God had provided them manna every day. Now they enjoy the produce of the land of Canaan. I love that. So where did they get this produce? Well, when this 2 million plus people came, everybody that's on the outer areas, the farms, the orchards, everything, go into the walled cities and they leave their fields. And what time of year is it? Harvest. So it's perfect. They just go and harvest it or else go to the barns. Basically, it's God's down payment on what they're about to experience, his complete abundance in the land. So when I was trying to think of an application in this, I couldn't help but think about this story over and over again. It really struck me because when Moses took them through the Red Sea, the water parts, they go through, the water comes back, the enemies are behind them, they are safely in the land. Think about crossing of the Jordan. It's the exact reverse of it because now the waters part, they cross over, the water closes, and now they are firmly in the land of the enemy, and there's no way to escape. They're firmly committed. Both times they had to trust the Lord. But it just struck me. Sometimes God leads us into a place of safety and rest, and sometimes he leads us into what seems like enemy territory. And I thought, how did Joshua know what God wanted him to do? Well, God spoke audibly to him. But what about us? How do we know when God's talking to us? How do we know what to do, where he's leading us, how to trust him? And over the last little bit, I've really been in one of those places of, God, I don't know what's next. What do you want? What do we do? How do I hear your voice? How do I know when it's you and not my own thinking? Which is hard for us today. I know God spoke to Joshua and we have his Holy Spirit who speaks to us. But how do we really know that? Well, he told Joshua, you've got to be in the Word. You've got to know what it says and you've got to obey it. And we do that. I've spent a lot of time over the last little bit seeking God and reading and understanding. But one of the things that really helped me is, if you're not familiar with spiritual formation, it's how we're formed, how we take up the character and nature of Christ. The whole purpose of this was so that through our relationship, our world will know, just like in the Old Testament, through the relationship with Israel, the world will come to know him. Today was a sad day because we lost Dallas Willard, and he's one of the founding fathers of the modern spiritual formation. He passed away at 77 of cancer. Richard Foster is another one, but I happen to like John Ortberg because he's Dallas Willard for Dummies is his handle. But it really helps by going through this because it shows that, you know, God's power is the same today as it was then. And his Holy Spirit does help us to grow and to change and to become more like Christ. And that's exactly what he calls us to do, just like he was calling them to do in the days of Joshua. And God uses each other. I mean, we're all seeking the Lord, and we can encourage and lift each other up. But it's always a challenge to know today when God is speaking to us. So I found a lot of comfort in this book, and I keep reading it over and over again. It tells us how to get connected with God. So next week, our story is going to continue with another miracle, because it's a religious procession that conquers the first city of Jericho, and a walled city at that.